For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And welcome. So we haven't chanted the Genjo Koan in service in a while. It's one of our lengthiest chants. It's one of the more important early writings from Eihei Dogen, the 13th century Japanese monk who brought this lineage of teaching from China to Japan. The Japanese monk founded what we now call Soto Zen. I'm teaching it this week in my online graduate course in Dogen, and I thought I would just touch on a few major points in this text. And please feel welcome to get out your chant book if you want to and follow along or not. But I just wanted to touch on a few points, and we'll have time for some discussion if you want to raise other questions. I've talked about this before and written about it, and there's lots and lots of stuff in here. The part of this that I've talked about most, that maybe some of you have heard me talk about, the second paragraph, to carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion, that myriad things come forth and experience themselves as awakening, is one of the clearest definitions of delusion and enlightenment I've ever heard. So that we bring ourselves forward and project ourselves onto our experience, onto the object world, is kind of the definition of delusion. So all of our idea of ourself, our ego self, our the stories we have about ourselves, all of our self-identity. This is our usual way of being in the world. And this is the ordinary human realm of delusion. We carry ourselves forward and see the world out there, so-called, as objects, and carry ourselves forward to experience these things. That's delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. We're part of that. That's not something that happens out there. So when everything arises together, and this is something that we start to see when we do this practice of Zazen and do this regularly, we are connected with everything. So this is something I've talked about a lot, these definitions of delusion and awakening. And yet, it's helpful to keep going back again and again. And he says, those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Buddhas are those who are enlightened about their delusions, who have great realization of delusions, who see clearly our delusions. That's what Buddha is. Those who have great delusions, who are greatly deluded about realization, are sentient beings. Or deluded beings. So deluded beings have lots of delusions about enlightenment. So that's also a kind of helpful definition. He doesn't say that and this is a really important point, that we should get rid of delusion and get awakening. Both are part of our human life. So he says there are those who continue realizing beyond realization, Buddha going beyond Buddha, or who are in delusion throughout delusion. And when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they're Buddhas. So it's not that Buddha walking down Irving Park Road says, oh yeah, I'm Buddha. It's just, Buddha just is awake to all the delusions in our mind and, sees that. But still, she's an actualized Buddha, and she continues actualizing Buddhas all around. So this paragraph is this really helpful definition of the difference between delusion and awakening, and Buddhas and sentient beings, and as he continues, the point isn't to get rid of one and get the other. These are both part of our human life. So I could say a lot more about this, but I've talked about this more. I will encourage your responses or questions to that. There's two other little sections I want to mention in this long, very helpful teaching poem. And we could do a whole practice, spring practice period on Genjo Koan sometime. There's so much in here. But I wanted to talk about, on the middle of the third page, he says, here is the place, here the way unfolds. Right here. So, it's very easy to think, oh, if I was only in a Himalayan mountain or somewhere special in some great monastery or something, then I could really be Buddha. But here is the place. Here the way unfolds. So the scroll that is in the back there, there was a living, what do they call them? Living treasure, as a calligrapher, and actually he writes modern kabuki plays, who was here once doing calligraphy, and he left this for us. It says, straightforward mind, this is the place of awakening. Here is the place, here the way unfolds. It's not about somewhere else. So how do we find our place right here? But that's a little tricky. So I want to go back to the bottom of the second page. Well, he's talking about fish swimming in the ocean and birds flying in the sky and knowing our place. Dogen also talks about elsewhere about abiding in your Dharma position. Abiding in your phenomenal expression. Knowing where you are. And he says about fish and birds, they've never left their elements. Then he says at the last three sentences on this page, when their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. Thus each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. So how do we see our place? How do we find our way in our place? Each of us has our own realm of practice. Each of us has our own Chicago spirit realm. Each of us has our own way of expressing Zazen heart in our life. How do we take that on? Here is the place. Here the way unfolds. And then he talks about this field. There's a lot of play in this field. There's a lot of how we find our space of practice is part of the art of practice. When their need is small, their field is small. So for each of us, for different people at times, they have... A person may have their own place of practice, their own realm, their own family, relationships, work, and to totally take that on is the place and the way. When their activity is large, their field is large. How do we see this, our own space of practice? He says, thus each of them totally covers its full range. Each of them totally experiences its realm. What is our realm of practice? It's not that there's, you know, it's not that there's a correct realm that you should be occupying. How do we occupy our space of practice? So, Gary Snyder, the great American Zen founder, one of the great American Zen founders, talks about Zen coming down to two things: Zazen and sweeping the temple. So we have temple cleaning here Sunday after Dharma talk. And he says our Zen practice comes down to Zazen, which we've just done, and then sweeping, cleaning the temple. And he says it's up to us to define how wide the temple is. So for some of us, the temple may extend to the south side. For some of us, the temple may extend to Washington, D.C. Who knows? For some of us, the temple extends to homeless people under bridges. For some of us, the temple includes our family and the people we work with. When their activity is large, their field is large. So sometimes our field is large. What is our field of practice? For some of us, our field includes the prairie lands in the Chicago area and the animals and birds. When their need is small, their field is small. Sometimes taking care of one thing really well may be the place and the way that it unfolds. Some fish migrate great distance. Some birds migrate great distances. Some stay localized. Same with fish. Each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. So the question here, the practice issue here, is how do we fully occupy our practice realm? And it's not that, you know, that you should have a wide realm or a small realm, but how do you... And sometimes it may expand, and sometimes it may contract. Sometimes we focus on one thing. Sometimes we, you know, move to China or something. How do we occupy that realm? So I think this question of how large or small the field is interesting, and how we occupy it, how we fully experience it. So I wanted to just highlight that. There's so many things in this Genjo Koan, and I invite you to bring up other portions of it. But then the last one I wanted to mention, Bo, could you show us the back of your raksha? So there was a lay ordination ceremony a week ago yesterday. And can you read the English part of that? Part of that is his name, which is actually relevant to this discussion. But
when Dharma fills body and mind, you realize something is missing.
Yeah, so the middle of the second page, it says, when Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it's already sufficient. So when we know a little bit about the teaching, about reality, sometimes we think it's enough. And maybe that's okay. But when Dharma fills your body and mind, when you are soaked in the truth and reality and the teaching, you realize something is missing. This something is missing is what I wanted to end with and then invite questions. Something's missing. What's this about? This is a mysterious, interesting, paradoxical sentence. And there's lots of ways to play with this. In some ways, it's the first noble truth that there is suffering. There is some sadness or misalignment in the world. And it's a noble truth because we can face it, we can realize it. And maybe when Dharma fills our body and mind, we see that truth. Or maybe this has to do with Buddha going beyond Buddha. There's always something more. Maybe until we pass away into nirvana. But when in as much as Buddha is alive, Buddha continues awakening. Buddhas are in awakening throughout awakening. Buddhas go beyond Buddha. There's something missing. There's still, maybe it has to do with that realm. Maybe there's something in our small realm that we haven't realized. Maybe there's some aspect of the realm that maybe we can stretch and get wider. Maybe it's not a matter of wider or smaller, but something is missing. Can we live fully with something missing? Can we be okay and whole, because Dharma does fill our body and mind then, with some question, something more that is required of us, or that we may require of the world, that we may see in terms of our need to respond to all of the suffering and chaos and craziness of the world. So I wanted to highlight those three little sections in this long text with many, many, many juicy parts. So I'll invite your responses to those or anything else in this text. Comments, questions, responses, please feel free. Yes, hi.
So I was kind of thinking that when you're content, you are fine with how things are, and you don't have the need to see more, to do more, so that when you're not content, you're more active because you're trying to do something to make yourself more content. And regardless if you're seeking to do more because you're not content, or you're content with how things are, you still have the same realm, or you still have the same existence.
Yeah, but that maybe that seeking to look for what more is needed is part of how we see the myriad things coming forth and experiencing themselves. So that inquiry is really important. To just be complacent is kind of not it. Even though, you know, there's times when it's good to just take a rest, you know. So, yeah, thank you. Other comments or responses? Questions? Reflections? Yes, Ben.
I've always understood this point about understanding that something is missing as sort of connected to this point about realizing delusion. Because in the rest of that paragraph, he sort of talks about these false perceptions, this way in which we assume that our particular perspective is reality when it's just our particular perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the point about the ocean is around, that's just how you see it when you're in the ocean, that there are myriad, many features in the dusty world, and the world beyond conditions, so you only see what your eye of practice can reach. So I sort of understood that as when Dharma fills your body and mind, you realize that you don't realize everything. You realize that you only realize sort of what you in your particular position are able to realize.
Good, yes, I think that's right. I think that's a big part of what he's saying there. I think we can take it further, as I was intimating, but I think that's right. One of the major teachings in this whole text is about the limitations of our awareness, about the limitations of our perception, how when you ride out in a boat and watch the shore, you think that the shore is moving. for example. You know, that we are limited in what we can, in how, just our human faculties, our perceptions, our, you know, dogs are aware of things that we're not, you know, for example. I mean, there's many examples. We can't, we don't know. There's so much that we don't know. No matter, you know, there's a lot of very smart people in this room, but still, there's so much that we don't know. To realize that something's missing, to realize that there's a limitation to what we know. Yeah, that's part of that's a big part of the truth when Dharma fills a body and mind. That goes back to what you were saying about looking further, what you were talking about. But I think there's more to it than that. I think there's something kind of ontological too. Other comments on any part of this text? Hi. It's okay, we forgive you.
Yeah, well, that's not what it's exactly. I'm ashamed of when I think of this situation, I think about people like the Koch brothers who want more and more money. And what's missing is they don't realize that it seems to me like they're encased in some sort of a bubble where they don't see outside the effect of accumulation. And this is a very, very unformed thought that I have, because I don't have any kind of accumulation like that, but I do have a nice apartment and I do have a beautiful view of the lake, and I'm extremely fortunate in physical terms, you know, in what I have.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always concerned that about what's missing. I was able to do this, but there's many people who can't. And when I come home to my apartment, I feel so grateful that I am able to walk in the door and have a place for myself. Because there's so many people that don't have that. I don't know if that was the teaching.
Well, you know, I think that to see... I think it does in some ways that something is missing includes both the people who are in need and the people who perpetuate that and feel and have great resources but feel like they need more and more and more and increase the need of others, and that's part of the when we talk about greed, hate, and delusion, and the base and part of what Buddhism teaches is basic contentment and not to increase our desires. So I think that's in here in various ways. I think to be aware of that and to be aware of that dynamic is to be aware that something is missing in the world, that sense of contentment. And how do we respond to that? Well, there's a limitation to each of us, each of our abilities to respond, you know, and that's maybe a source of sadness, I don't know. What do we do? So there's a question there. And I think, so I think you posed that. I think you asked, I think that's the question you were posing. How do we respond to the question of need and the first noble truth and the sadness of the world and so forth? But also, you know, what's... how do, so that goes back to what is our realm? How do we occupy our realm and take care of it and do our best to totally experience and cover the range of what we can do in our each in our own realm? And sometimes it gets larger and sometimes it gets smaller.
So in a way, someone, their activities are large, but they do a lot. They may experience more, maybe not deeply, but more broadly. And then if someone's needs are small, like a family, a job, and something, that they're not experiencing that broadness, but they're experiencing the depth. So for both of those situations, you're always missing something. You can't have both. They're still fully experiencing each.
Good, yeah. That's one way of seeing it. And then, you know, when and sometimes when somebody is trying to cover a very full range, you know, it's very common that people, if they try and do more than they can do, get burnt out and need to take care of a smaller range. So how do we actually balance out what is an appropriate range? And it changes in terms of our actual lives. Yeah. Other comments or responses? Yes, David.
It's one thing when you're, two things actually in response, but also when you're first talking, what really, in my delusion, what I came up with is that enlightenment or realization is not a static place, that we flow in and out of it. That it's not, you know, okay, I'm going to get enlightened, and I got it, and I'm always there. It's more fluid, is what I hear you saying. That we go in and out of that. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, it's possible to have understandings or have realizations of awakening and then forget about that or get caught up in some delusion. That happens. It's possible to have experience of awakening and continue developing that awakening. So, you know, there are and it's possible people do have awakening experiences and then get caught up in greed or confusion afterwards. So it's not like Buddha became the Buddha and was awakened and then went home and forgot about the rest of the world. He continued practicing and awakening the rest of his life for 40 years. So Dogen talks about Buddha going beyond Buddha. So that's why, you know, receiving the precepts is to remind us to continue trying to express Zazen heart and awakening aspiration and awareness in the challenges of everyday activity.
And I was going to also comment on this, you know, large realm, small realm. If I have realization, it doesn't matter what size it is, I'm content with where I'm at. It's not that anything is missing, you know, that I, you know, I'm in a small realm or I'm missing something, I have to go to a larger realm, or if in a larger realm I've overextended myself, I have to go back to a small realm. It's more about being content and fully realizing whatever realm you're in.
But if you think it's already sufficient, then Dharma does not fill your body and mind.
Pardon?
If you think it's already sufficient, then Dharma is not filling your body and mind.
Okay.
So there's a question that needs to be part of how you are totally experiencing your realm. Suzanne, I felt like you had a question or a comment. No? Okay. I just sort of thought I heard. Okay. Sorry. So, as I said, there are many, many parts of this text, and there, you know, many. I was pointing out three areas, but yes, Jason.
I had more of a question about how to read Dogen, because he always seems to be oscillating between multiple ways of reading and legibility. It's like there's a revolving door of logics.
Good.
And in Western philosophical context, you can read like an argument, and there's a linear quality to the argument. And I don't get linearity.
Good, right.
Is there a trick to Dogen?
Well, it's not a trick. It's just that, but there is a few things I usually suggest. One is just to read it through. So we chanted it, you know, the whole text. But then to go back and look at the parts that spoke to you and sit with them. Like go over, you know, like I did, you know, with a few sentences to hang out with a few sentences and see what comes up for you. And there is a logic to it, but it's not, you know, the linear, rational Western logic. It's the logic of awakening. So it's a different kind of logic, and it takes a while to get into that. So reading, I've sometimes compared reading Dogen to like taking a hot bath or listening to a symphony, or, you know, you just have to bathe in it and don't worry about trying to have some understanding of it, but play with it. You know, where are the places that, if there's a phrase or a passage, a paragraph, a sentence that really tickles you or interests you, you know, like, you know, you can write it out and memorize it or something. Or if there's something that really bothers you, you could do the same thing and see if you can feel what he's getting at. And it's not, and sometimes it's, you know, you can understand it in many different ways and actually kind of play with, it's not about trying to figure out what he meant. It's like, what does it mean in your zazen? So those are my suggestions for reading him. Laurel, do you have ideas about that?
I would suggest reading more than one translation of the same thing. They're astonishingly different from one another. And sometimes you can triangulate and find even more interesting possibilities. There are a lot in our library. Read a small thing and then read two or three different people's version of it. That's really, really interesting exercise.
Yeah, particularly Genjo Koan. There's several really, you know, somewhat competent translations, and some of them, you know, in the same passage are quite interestingly variant. So, yes, thank you.
And sometimes the footnotes are just as long.
Yeah, and sometimes the footnotes are very helpful too. Sometimes. Yes?
I don't think it's like incredibly not Western if you read Hegel. There's a lot of like thesis, antithesis, synthesis, and I feel like this reads the same way, where you have to like experience reading it as a process versus
right.
Experiencing it as like statement, therefore. But I feel like, so it's similar to what you're saying, but you aren't trying to arrive at like from one point to another point, but the process in itself is the thing. I guess the other thing, I feel like I'm hearing a lot of people talking about large field, small field, large realm, small realm, and it feels like it doesn't really matter. Like for me, the thing that is missing is that it is the realm anyway, and that the thing that feels like it's missing is that we're like understanding ourselves as manipulators of phenomena, but instead like we're recipients of it. I don't know if that makes sense.
Totally, yes. And that's what he's talking about when he says, as opposed to carrying ourselves forward to experience and manipulate, and you know, the world of objects, that everything comes up together and we're part of that. And that is, you know, this key distinction between the realm of awakening and our usual ordinary realm of trying to manipulate the world of objects. But yeah, what you said, you know, Hegel, you know, that there's definitely the dialectical kind of process involved in a lot of Dogen's thinking. Well, thank you all. Any last comments or thoughts or reflections? Okay, we'll close with the four Bodhisattva vows, which are on page... bottom of page 36 in your chant book. We'll chant them three times. Being